I'm the doctor, by the way.
You're listening to Pieces of Eight, the Doctor Who podcast that likes to think it's not easily forgotten. We're on the trail, as ever, of those sections of the Doctor Who universe that feature the incarnation of the Time Lord, as played by Paul McGann. I'm Rebecca Chapman.
And I'm... Kenny Smith. I thought I'd forgotten there, but no, I remembered. You join us as we resume our quest to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen, in books, novellas, full cast audio, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, magazines, and more.
Oh, we're sticking with the and more.
Yeah, which we did a few weeks back.
We did. Fair enough. This week, we're heading back to the world of comics, but still not the DWM strips from Panini, which we really need to do sometime.
We do.
We do indeed. But this time, we're taking a look at a multi-doctor adventure, which features the Eighth Doctor. Yes, that's right. We're talking about The Forgotten by Tony Lee with art from Pierre Guerra, which was originally published by IDW Comics in 2008, 2009, when David Tennant was the current incarnation, featuring his Doctor and Martha Jones.
Indeed it does. The adventure took place over six parts, and the Eighth Doctor story featured in Part 5, Revelation, published in December 2008. Craig, I was 34 then.
I was 13.
Anyway, the whole story was collected and reprinted as the graphic novel The Forgotten in April 2009. And then later in 2013, The Forgotten was published in hardback by IDW, which had a new afterword by Tony Lee. And later, Titan Comics reprinted it alongside Agent Provocateur in the 10th Doctor Archives, Volume 1, in 2016. So, Becca, how's that reading voice of yours? Is it all ready to go? And what does the back cover blurb of the original trade paperback tell us about The Forgotten?
Oh, my reading voice is good to go once I prepare it, obviously. But I just want to comment on the fact that I am a big fan of Titan Comics.
Oh, good. They are very
okay. Stranded in a strange museum that's dedicated to him, and with the TARDIS lost, the Doctor and Martha Jones must make sense of their surroundings, hindered by one small fact. The Doctor has lost the memories of every one of his previous incarnations. With items relevant to each Doctor in their possession, the Doctor and Martha must try to use them to regain total recall before it's too late, starting with his earliest incarnation's memories, involving Susan, Barbara and Ian, but quickly moving on to Zoe and Jamie, all the way through to Tegan, Ace and Rose Tyler. This all-new story, written by Tony Lee of Starship Troopers, features artist Pia Guerra's first stunning comic book art since her Eisner award-winning work on Why, The Last Man. Oh, ain't it cool news that it was the best miniseries.
Well, it is really good. I enjoyed it. That's why I thought it was worth doing. So yeah, I enjoyed it. How did you find the Eighth Doctor section? Which we'll limit it to that, otherwise we could be here all day talking about each individual
story. That is true. We could very easily spend far too much time on this. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's very much, oh no, the Doctor's lost his memory again. But I liked it. It was good. I enjoyed it. I've forgotten the name of the alien, but it's the one...
Chantier, rather than Chantal.
Yes. The ones with the name that they say before and after every sentence. I love them. They're adorable.
Chantal.
Yes. Exactly.
Do you mean Chantal? Anyway,
I would if that was my name.
Yeah, that's true. Becca. But we'd be here forever if we were to make every sentence in the way the Chantal speaks and Chantier. So
that is true.
Let's not do that. But no, I love the fact, I mean, this is our first proper look into the Time War, at the time Big Finish. And it's interesting just sort of how we... Obviously, the ending is completely different because we think that the Doctor is going to end the Time War, but he's assembling a different sort of weapon. So, yeah. And it's just pretty much an escape from a locked-up cell, using his cravat as the object to get away. But I enjoyed it. I think it's a good, short, but fun wee story.
It is indeed. Big fan. enjoy the overarching doctors working with people. Again, it's not necessarily his companion, because there's that whole thing where he's not 100% convinced that it's actually Martha.
Yes, well, that's true.
The thing that I quite like.
Yeah, the thing that I was quite amused by with this one is that the doctor says at one point, "I once convinced my most heated enemy that I was half human, with nothing more than a wide-eyed expression, a couple of words, and a half-broken communion arch." And that, okay, so that's the whole half-human on my mother's side thing explained in one comic strip.
Yes, I loved that so much.
It was daft, and it's interesting just with the whole obviously the Doctor's wearing the TV movie costume, because this is years before Night of the Doctor, and we didn't know anything about the War Doctor. But the thing is, the Doctor also says, "I never remembered him, of course. The Great Key has a habit of wiping certain memories when used." So maybe the Doctor did try to use one sort of device to try and stop the Time War using the Great Key of Rassilon, but it didn't work and it wiped his memory, and the Time War continued as normal, and therefore this fits in with canon quite nicely.
It does. It does fit in very nicely into what we know to be canon.
The other thing, of course, is the fact that, as you mentioned earlier, it's like it's not just the Eighth Doctor loses his memory. It's quite similar in structure, this whole strip, The Forgotten, to the Eight Doctors. As the Doctor revisits sort of the events of his past, has an encounter with his previous incarnations, so in this case they're all mental projections of him at the end, rather than being the genuine article. So it's quite it's good fun. It's really good. Sorry, I'm just munching a grape at the moment. I'm trying to be healthy today.
That's okay.
We get to see the figure in the operating in the darkness, wearing a black suit and has a beard, and of course we all think it's going to be the Master, but it's not. It's an evil version of the Tenth Doctor, created by some sort of evil mind parasite fly thing. So, sorry, people, if you haven't read it, I've just gone and spoiled it for you. But
I was going to say spoilers.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, it's good. And I mean, afterwards, the Doctor asks if the Doctor was always alone in that incarnation, and explains that his eighth incarnation started and ended alone because of the Time War, and he talks about other things that are mentioned. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it does fit in with continuity in my head.
It does. So Kenny, who have we got to tell us about The Forgotten? Because I can't quite remember.
Well, it's another of my interviews, which I did at Gallifrey in February. I didn't actually realise Tony Lee was going to be there, so I made a point of saying hello to him, as we'd spoken ages and ages and ages ago about his big finished script, Rat Trap, and I remembered that he had written The Forgotten, so I thought that would be an extra chance to get a bonus episode of our podcast, and he said he'd be more than up for it, and was delighted to chat about the story, and here he is.
Hello, my name is Tony Lee. I am a multiple-time New York Times best-selling author, and I am the writer of the Doctor Who comics for IDW, for the 10th Doctor and 11th Doctor, including Doctor Who The Forgotten, which was pretty much a primer for any American fan, with every Doctor up to the 10th Doctor having their own little story.
Fantastic. So, welcome to Pieces of Eight.
Thank you.
And the first question we always ask anyone who's coming on for the first time is, what do you recall about the first time you saw the TV movie?
The first time I saw the TV movie, the thing I recall the most is the Sylvester McCoy gurning scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the mouth moving backwards and forwards. But it was really weird because I loved, obviously I loved Doctor Who when it was on, but I really loved all the, like, the best of the best and stuff like that. And I think the moment that you saw Eric Roberts, I was just happy for that. I was very glad to sort of see that thing going on. But yeah, it's really weird actually, because I didn't see the TV movie when it came out. And the first thing I actually read is I read Gary's adaptation before I saw it, because I think it was because it was the 90s and I was working somewhere else. So it was really strange reading it and then seeing it, because it's slightly different in the way it was done. But yeah, I would say it was definitely the Gurning, and it's a live scene and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So give us a wee bit about your background as a comics writer.
Yeah, well, I've been writing comics now for 20 years. I was, before that, I worked in journalism and I wrote radio dramas. And I was a Covent Garden street performer at one point. And the way that, you know, I mean, my first writing work was games reviews when I was like 16 years old for Sinclair Spectrum magazine. And basically, I got to about 2003, and I was in a situation where I was in New York and I had a chance to meet with DC and Marvel on the same day. And I hadn't worked in comics at this point, and I contacted Marvel Comics and sort of said, hey, I'm Tony Lee, I'm a British writer, I'm turning up into New York on a Thursday, I'm literally only around for one afternoon, I'm seeing DC Comics at 4, can I see you at 1 o'clock? And they said, yeah, sure, come along. They just started doing a new thing called Epic, which was an aiming to try and get non-writers in, so people from film and TV, and I'd just done like little radio dramas and stuff like that, so I had some scripts to show them, and they said, yeah, come in, and through that I got X-Men, and an X-Men got me into, like, once you have a room and you say, can I write a comic for you, and they say, what have you done, and you go, I've done X-Men, they kind of let you in, even if it's only like an 11-page story, it gets you in the door. And then I phoned up DC and said, hey, I'm seeing Marvel at 1 o'clock, can I see you at 4? So I'd literally lied and cheated my way into comics, because if one of them had said no, I wouldn't have been able to say it to the other one. And DC spent like an hour saying, don't do it, you'll be miserable, it's a life of pain and suffering, and literally took 10 years to get a job with DC in any way whatsoever.
Wow, that is amazing. So how did the IDW contact come about?
I'd been working with I'd been pitching IDW a zombie ninja Viking comic with Dan Boltwood, which was called Bjorn of the Dead, and it never happened, but it got me on the radar, and we were chatting to Chris Ryle, and then Chris one day contacted me and said, hey, we've got the license, we're going to be looking to get some stories, Gary Russell's doing the first series, and I was like, I've got no ego here, it's Gary Russell, you know, do it, it's, you're just stupid if you don't. And I knew I'd kind of missed out on that. I was thinking, oh well, you know, it's nice. And then about 6 months later they contacted and said, hey, we're going to do a second six-parter, we thought you could do something, you know, do you want to do like a primal or something? And I knew they didn't really know what they had, because I kind of had this attitude of like, yeah, hey, we've got like, you know, there's the Doctor, there's 10 of them, do they live in the same house kind of thing, you know. So I said, okay, I'm going to do a primer, it's going to be, this is the Doctor, this is how it works. And I pitched three ideas, and one was like a very basic, you know, bronze level, the Doctor cleans his teeth, or the Doctor goes to Tesco's kind of thing. The second one was a very basic kind of, I think it was the Doctor and Charlie Chaplin have an adventure kind of story. And then the third one was this absolute batshit crazy, everything including the kitchen sink story, which had everything in it. And my thought was, if I throw one extreme on either end, they'll have to go to the middle. And they came back and said, yeah, we like this one. We want to do the one with all the Doctors and everything going on. And that's how it started. And I'd been talking to Pia Guerra at the time, who had just come off Why the Last Man, and she was absolutely massive. And they said, yeah, would you like to have Pia do your artwork? And I said, yeah, absolutely. It would be brilliant. And so Pia did started working on that. And unfortunately, she had a death in the family, which kind of meant that people like Kelly Yates had to come on. But it was incredible. I mean, the first time we met to talk about the book, she was in the UK. And it was the same weekend that Tom Baker opened the Doctor Who Experience at Earl's Court.
Oh, wow.
So you've got me and Pia Guerra, who have just announced that we're doing this book, turning up to the event, watching Tom Baker be Tom Baker. And the people who were organising the event were really pissed off because he was supposed to smack this hand buzzer thing and didn't. I mean, he came back. At one point, a Cyberman was supposed to come down the escalators and say, like, delete. And he's going, oh, no, the Cybermen are here. Quick, smack the button, everybody in. And instead, Tom pulled a £5 note out of his pocket, walked over and said, here you go, sonny, go buy a pint. Came back and carried on talking. Eventually, the thing blows up. Everyone runs in. And the guy walks up and was like, could we get you two guys to just stand and pretend you're pressing the button? So we got to be the here we go, and it was just like that national lottery photo. But it was, yeah, that was, it was insane, it was incredible, and I never thought I'd get anything else. And then as I was finishing it, I had IDW contact me, and they were like, we want to talk to you about The Forgotten. And I genuinely thought I'd done something wrong and I was going to get fired or something. Yeah, it wasn't coming out. And the conversation was, it's done so well, would you like to write the ongoing? And I was outside a pub at a meeting of the Dracula Society as IDW told me I was doing Doctor Who. It was very surreal.
That's absolutely incredible. And it's, as you say, it's a story where it's a really good primer for an audience that doesn't know Doctor Who and getting to know the previous Doctors. So what was your thinking? How did you plan it out? Did you try to go for something so it was typical to each Doctor's era?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to have, when you think of each Doctor, there's a certain style to it. So, you know, the first Doctor story, it's early Doctor Who. So, you know, you've got the first Doctor pretty much trying to kill Ian on a regular basis because he doesn't like him. You know, the second Doctor, and the colour grading was different, so each one looked more like it. So the third Doctor was quite insane because we went for that kind of madness style. I think it was like Greyhounds in Spaceships or something like that. And we wanted the eighth Doctor story to be earnest. You know, we wanted it to be really like, you could believe it was a Paul McGann episode, if that makes sense. We had the big finishes, but we wanted to do something that kind of worked that way. But at the time, obviously, Russell had just started. We knew there was a time war, we knew what had happened, but we don't really know much. So we wanted to have the eighth Doctor is in the time war, we know this. So I was trying to put something at that time. And that's what was kind of weird, because we didn't know any, I mean, all the stuff that came in later with, like, you know, when you see the War Doctor and stuff like that, this was like, we were completely cold. We didn't think we'd be allowed. We were stunned we were allowed to get what way we did, because we had to put everything to the BBC.
Yeah, because I think, I remember reading the comics, and was it the Charlie Pollard line? Was that in one of yours?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes out with it.
Yeah, we mentioned Big Finish Companions because we thought, well, you know, no one's going to know in IDW. Yeah. They're not going to know who these people are, so we can do it. But yeah, he talks about Charlie Pollard and basically the whole, he makes a comment about how he's really good at convincing people things. And I think it's something like, you know, I convinced the master I was half human with some like hand waving and a half broken chameleon arch or something like that. And I didn't think it was going to be a throwaway line.
Yep.
And then the next thing I know, there's people making, there's a YouTube audio sort of motion comic thing that someone made with it all, with like people doing the acting and stuff, because it's like, well, this is the proof that the film is canon.
Yep.
And this is the proof that he does know why he did it. But we did it for fun. You know, we did it because, I mean, we've got the Peter Cushing Doctor Who at the end of the ongoing series. We could get away with what we wanted. It was quite surreal.
Yeah, because that was the thing, you were looking at it, it's just like there's absolutely nothing's off limits. There's old monsters ahoy, just references to everything going. And for you as a fan, that just must have been like heaven.
It was. I mean, the one downside we had was every other Doctor was a Doctor Who adventure with the Doctor and his companions, apart from the Eighth Doctor, because we knew Grace wasn't around. So we had to do something where it was a Doctor and someone else. And so we had to create someone for the Doctor to actually hang around with. And that was the most surrealist thing, because we had to find somebody who could be completely expendable, but at the same time, we didn't want to kill them off.
Yeah.
So, and then that gave us the thing of, well, let's go with like an alien race and people that we... And that's when you're starting to bring in characters that haven't signed up since New Who. And that was one of the things we also wanted to do, was have like, I think it's the fifth Doctor fights Jadu. You know, we could do that kind of mixture, that mashup, and that's what we kind of did with the Eighth Doctor.
It was almost a bit like Big Finish doing Classic Doctors, New Monsters, long before that was even a thing, which was wonderful. Now, something else that I absolutely like is the fact that we get to see the moment.
Yes, and we didn't know even what the moment was at the time, so it was another chancing the arm and seeing what we could get away with. So.
Yeah.
And I hope people liked it. I mean, you know, we played with the Time War quite a lot, and IDW seemed to be okay with BBC, and BBC seemed to be happy with what they were doing. So if no one's complaining, I feel like I'm doing an okay job. And it seemed to be doing that.
Yeah, because I think it was, I imagine there must have been, did you describe in any way the look of it, or was it, did you just leave
it? I made it as vague as possible.
Right.
Because I didn't want to do it. When we mentioned things like in the Forgotten, we also talk about the Medusa Cascade and stuff like that. I didn't know what the Medusa Cascade was, but it was a term we knew, so I could use it. And it was just pushing a little bit thin, just to make them think there's a little bit more to it. It was that little bit of a sleight of hand kind of, magic to kind of make you think, oh, when it wasn't. So
yeah, and the other thing that I particularly remember is virtually using the cravat to do the rope slide.
Oh, the rope slide, yes.
Which is just genius. And it's funny, that just sort of sticks in my head. It's sort of like, it seems so, just so action-packed, it's like very much fits the McGann Doctor.
Well, that was the plan. As I said, we knew, he's the guy who gets on motorbikes. He's the guy who does it. He was possibly one of the most, at the time, one of the most active doctors of the original lot, apart from maybe when John Pertwee was in his Whomobile and stuff. So there's an element of running, jumping, climbing trees with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great strip, and it's great fun. And the fact that you must have been delighted, the fact it was reissued as a trade paperback.
Well, we knew it would come out as a trade, because that was always the plan. What was amazing was the fact that we were at San Diego Comic Con when it came out, and David Tennant was doing an interview with MTV. And at the time, I was with MTV Geek, we had two comics that they were running. I was doing some stuff with Stan Lee and stuff like that. And while he was doing the interview, they said, how do you feel about being in comics? And he was like, oh, I've not really seen what they've done. And I'd done the first, because after I'd got the gig to do IDW, I also got the second 10th Doctor, Doctor Who monthly script. And I got it by pure chance. It was Clayton Hickman needed a space filled, and I came and did it. So weirdly, that became my first time doing it. And when they said, have you seen the comics? He was like, no, I haven't been over to see it yet, and blah, blah, blah. They gave him a copy of Doctor Who the Forgotten. And they said, oh, here you go. And he's, because I'd given it to them because I was in the room earlier on talking about something else. And so he's doing the interview, and he stops doing the interview because he's too busy reading the book. And he just looks at me and goes, it's brilliant. And at that point, the IDW marketing people were like, yes! Because then it got re-released like the following day with a quote sort of saying, it's brilliant, David Tennant. But what I was really worried about, and I was really concerned, was when IDW lost the license, they couldn't do it anymore. And I thought, that's it, it's gone. Because, like, you know, with DC and Marvel, you can find books that have been out for like 100 years almost, and they just appear out of nowhere. But this was gone. And even then, you had a situation where, you know, in the UK, you couldn't have it legally at the time. But then when Titan took it over, they brought them all out as omnibuses. And so you had this omnibus section with it, and all of my things were there, and it was amazing. So I had this second lease of life, in a way.
Yeah. Now, let's a quick mention of them. When we were chatting the other day before we did the recording about the negativity, the online it doesn't count stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not the Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I just find it so bizarre that it was long before, and it's great fun, and then it's just sort of like the time war can mess up everything. The moment could be a gazillion things.
Well, this is the thing. At the end of the day, the Time Lord created multiple universes and times and things like that, because nothing matters. If you look at everything in the show, they don't all fit. You know, and you have to go with that. I mean, Paul Cornell said, like, there is no canon in Doctor Who, because the moment you create a canon, it gets broken. And we always said that. I mean, we knew that what we wanted was something that you could go, is canon enough to be in the show, but at the same time, you can just push it away and not see it. So if you haven't read the book, you're not going to go, oh, I didn't know about this, and now all my stories are bollocksed. You know, so there's an element of that. And yeah, I'm more than happy with that. I mean, I'll be honest, there's a large chunk of the Doctor Who run that we did where I look at it and I think, we did that and that appeared in the show. So, you know, and I know that Moffat and that weren't sitting there reading my comic and going, oh, this is good, let's use this. It's just that so many people have so many ideas and they're all going to turn up in the time. So yeah. I'm fine with that. You don't think it's canon, that's great. We had, in the end of the 7th Doctor section, we brought the Peter Cushing Doctor Who bit. You know, but we never said it, but he's there. So yeah. If you think it's canon, then Peter Cushing is now canon.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose, given that you've got a lengthy career, and as you mentioned...
That's a polite way of saying I'm old, isn't it, really?
Well, I think we're roughly the same age, so it's all good. You've also had, as you mentioned, some rather best-selling work. And so how does this fit in the overall... Where's it, like, effectively your canon, how do you regard it as part of it?
Oh, for me, my work.
You personally, where do you place it in all of the work you've done?
It's So when people say to me, like, you know, what's the best thing you ever read, or what's the best thing you ever wrote, and stuff like that, The Forgotten is the best thing I ever did. Because I sat down and I poured my heart and soul into it. I thought I had one shot. You know, I had one shot to do the Doctor Who story. I was never going to be on a TV show. I was never going to be writing books. I was never going to be doing anything else. This was my one shot to do it. And I threw my heart and soul into it. I mean, like, you know, without giving away spoilers, there's a moment where the Doctor at the very end gets to say goodbye to somebody. And it, again, it's another thing that answers a question that everybody always goes, what's going on with Susan, sort of thing. And I was in tears when I wrote it. And I've had people contact me saying, like, you know, I was in tears when this came out. And it's just, it made me, I want to be a writer and stuff like that. And I can't complain about that, you know. But yeah, it's Doctor Who. I've got a love and hate affair with Doctor Who. You know, I absolutely love writing Doctor Who. I hated writing the Star Trek crossover. But then that was because there were people involved and there was lots of backstage stuff going on. And I couldn't get them to understand why there were certain things that Doctor Who was important and how it wasn't a Star Trek show featuring some guy in a tweed jacket. Which is what it became.
For those who want to know more, where can they find you on social media and websites?
You can find me at Mr. Tony Lee, MrTonyLee, and that's on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. If you're looking at my crime novels and stuff, I wrote them as Jack Gatland, and that's at hoodedmanmedia.com. Hoodedmanmedia as in Robin Hood, Hooded Man, so in case you can't work out how it's spelt. And yeah, find me at a Doctor Who convention, standing in the corner going, I want my comics to be re-released.
Fantastic. Tony, thank you so much for
taking
time to chat.
Absolute pleasure, mate. Absolute
pleasure.
Here at
Gallifrey. Speak to you soon. Cheers. And that was a fist bump at the end, people.
I didn't slap him in the face.
I deserved it. Well, no, I didn't. I did some gurning, though, when we mentioned the gurning. So thanks, everyone.
So is that our final chat from Gallifrey, so I can stop feeling jealous, you know, even though I don't do jealousy, obviously?
No, definitely not. But yes, that is the last of them. And that's not bad. We've had a good few chats from it. And as I said, it was literally a flash of inspiration when I saw Tony there and thought, hang on a minute. So yes, big thanks to Tony for taking the time. I did actually speak to Pia, but she's snowed under at the moment with work and wasn't able to join us, although she does love her Doctor Who, so there we go.
As it was your final chat from Gallifrey, I would just like to point out that I'm really pleased that you had such a great time. And I've really enjoyed listening to all the interviews.
Well, that's very kind. I'm glad that you enjoyed. And see, they were great fun to do. And just, I noticed that in the background of a Simon Gerrer interview a few weeks ago, you can hear Janet Fielding quite loudly in the background at one point. So see who you can spot in the background for this one. This one was a bit quieter. This was near the end of the final day. So it's not quite so noisy in the green room.
Lots of people already having left.
Exactly. Not because I was there, I should
point. That makes sense. Oh no, I'm sure. Now remember, if you've enjoyed today's Pieces of Eight, or indeed liked any episode we've done, please do leave a review for us on iTunes or your podcast provider, as it means more people can find our episodes and it's always appreciated. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter if you do not do so already, at Pieces of Eight.
And also feel free to join our Facebook group too, so send us a request to join it and we'll find out some more about what we've got coming up in the future, as well as some general chit-chat.
That is very true. We had a very interesting conversation about me popping out a baby a few weeks ago.
We did indeed.
And in the final episode of this series, we'll be back next week with the first ever podcast interview with Jonathan Clements about his Eighth Doctor and Lucy story, Immortal Beloved.
I love that.
Until next time, I'm sure you do. It's got Lucy Miller in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Until next time, I've been Rebecca Chapman.
And I was, and still am, Kenny Smith. Bye-bye.
Bye.